Reflecting on the impact of Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's Vietnam War documentary film series on PBS. Ken Burns has said that he hopes his film about the Vietnam War will spur conversation and help unify the country. Now that it has been shown in its entirety, what do you think? Do you see the Vietnam War differently? Did the film help you understand what happened? Or did it make you more confused, even angry? Are you talking about the film and the war with your colleagues and family members? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the film and your reaction to it. Our guests, all Mainers, include a Vietnam veteran, an NBC correspondent who covered the fall of Saigon, his wife, who fled Vietnam as a refugee, and the head of Maine's Bureau of Veteran Services. We invite you to join the conversation. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The highly anticipated Ken Burns, Lynn Novick PBS documentary about the Vietnam War concluded last night. Today, we want to get your reaction to the 18-hour documentary. What did you learn from watching the program? Did it change or reinforce your opinion of the war, the protesters, the politicians, and the generals of that era? In the studio with me, Adria Horn. She is director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. Terry Grass is a U.S. Army veteran of the Vietnam War. And joining us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C., two Mainers who are out of town, Jim Laurie and Soon San Vo. Jim Laurie is an award-winning journalist who covered the end of the Vietnam War. And Soon San is Jim's wife. She grew up in Vietnam during the war and later fled to America. As always, we want to hear from you. What was your reaction to the Vietnam series? Did it change your opinion? And did you learn something? Are you talking about it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'd like our audience to know a little more about each of you before we begin this conversation. And Jim, I'll start with you. You were a young correspondent and you were there. We saw the footage last night. If we watched the documentary or the night before, you were there when those helicopters took off from that roof. You could have gotten on them, but did not.
Yes, Jennifer, thanks for having me on the show today. I actually got to Vietnam 5 years earlier in 1970 to cover the invasion of Cambodia, the incursion, as President Nixon called it at the time. And then 5 years later, yes, you're right, we decided to stay in Vietnam to witness what was going to happen, which was, of course, the communist takeover of Saigon on April the 30th, 1975.
Okay, and you have done a lot of coverage in the years since, correct?
Well, I've been going back to Vietnam almost every year. For about 4 years, the communist government wouldn't let me come back. They said I was a rather, shall we say, not reliable journalist from their point of view. But once I got into the 1980s and Vietnam began to open up again, I would go back almost every year. I married my wife, who was from Vietnam, much later, and we went back to Vietnam together. We now have a home, actually, in Saigon, and we're on our way back to Vietnam. In fact, in another 2 weeks or so, we'll be back in first in Hanoi and then down in Ho Chi Minh City by the end of October.
Soon San, tell me, you were a child during the Vietnam War. Where did you live?
I was living in the little town in Quy Nhơn, mm-hmm. central coast of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. And when did you flee? Was it right away or later?
No, I fled. I fled the town in March 30th to Saigon. And then I stayed in Saigon and I left again on the between of April 28th to April 30th.
Mm. By boat.
1975, yes.
1975 by boat.
Yes.
So
yes.
Thank you for coming here and joining us today. What about you, Terry? Tell me your story.
My story starts right out of high school. I was 19 years old. My father was a military man for 25 years. I'd been to 13 different schools in 12 years. So I was drafted because I was 19 years old, and I ended up enlisting for 4 years to get an Army language school in Monterey Peninsula. But I ended up learning Morse code for that language and becoming a radio operator in Vietnam.
What years?
I was there from October 67 to October 68.
Okay. And Adria, I'm looking at you. You're too young to have served in Vietnam. But you have served five tours of duty, I understand.
I have. I've actually been in the Army since 2001, so I was commissioned just before 9/11 happened from West Point.
And where have you served?
Well, there's an operation that was domestic right after 9/11 when the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were still burning. So that was Operation Noble Eagle. That was domestic here in D.C. I was in Iraq for the invasion. I was in Afghanistan for all of 2006. I spent 8 months in the Philippines with a special operations team, and then I actually stayed in Asia for most of 2010 at the United States Embassy in Jakarta on another special operations mission.
All right. And not only are you the head of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services, the director there, but you also served as moderator when Maine Public had screenings of the film throughout the state. And I'm wondering, Adria, what that experience was like for you and what you're hearing from Maine veterans, what you have been hearing from them during the last 2 weeks.
So there's the personal and the professional side. So personally, you know, Vietnam wasn't my conflict. My conflict actually still hasn't ended. But hearing, watching, seeing, and listening about Vietnam from so many different perspectives has just been really, I hate to say this, it's really been a delight, actually, to hear from so many different people and to actually have people have a platform to talk about it more so than they, I think they have recently. And hearing stories that Vietnam veterans perhaps wouldn't have necessarily shared with other people, I will say that no one has had a similar story. No one's had a similar experience. Every single opinion has been based on a very individual and raw experience that they have shared. And I couldn't even put a pattern to it if I wanted to. It's been fascinating.
Terry, what is your reaction to the film?
My reaction is I love the way they portrayed all the people that took part, the NVA folks that were able to speak and talk about their experience, the Viet Cong, the South Vietnamese soldiers, the American soldiers, the deserter, the protesters. They covered all sides. And to me, that's something, you know, as a soldier in the service in a war zone, you don't hear about all the stuff that's going on at home. You just don't. I don't get the perspective of a North Vietnamese soldier. You know, it showed me that we're all people, we're all individuals, we're all human beings that are just trying to live on this planet together.
Was it hard for you to watch?
I had a lot of tears.
Jim Laurie, what about you? What's your reaction? And Swan, if you want to jump in as well.
From my point of view, it was one of, it was certainly Burns' I think, most technically proficient film he has done. And of course, most of us have been watching Burns' documentary since the Civil War film that he did many years ago. My slight reservation about the film is that I came into the war at a time when the war was much more about the Vietnamese, the Cambodians, and the Laos. And I was a little bit disappointed that in 18 hours, I didn't have a richer sense of the lives of Vietnamese, Cambodians, and Laos. For example, in the episode which covers 1970, the entire invasion of Cambodia, which pushed the war in a much wider sense throughout Cambodia and resulted in hundreds of thousands of Cambodians dying during the war and nearly 2 million dying after the war, all of that was reduced to about 3 minutes out of this enormous documentary. So there were, shall we say, gaps in the film that left me a little bit disappointed. And most of those gaps had to be in the portrayal of the people of the region of Indochina. He was far stronger in his portrayal of American veterans and the Americans who were part of either the war, the anti-war movement, or the war itself, and a little bit less proficient in handling South Vietnam. I was told that Lynn Novick, his co-director, actually was the person who said, we've got to tell the Vietnamese story Initially, Ken Burns said, no, this is more an American story. I'm not sure if we need that. Later, I'm told that Burns said he was very grateful that he had listened to his co-director.
I've read the same thing. Suwan, I know you have not watched the entire film, but I'm wondering what you have seen, what you thought.
Yes, back in Maine, my husband and my two sons are watching the show, and they asked me to join them, and I refused to see it until 2 days ago. I was in my apartment in D.C., and I happened to switch on the TV to see the tennis channel and happened to see the Ken Burns documentaries, and I saw the scenery of the My Lai massacre. And took me, I'm just so emotional right now, and you understand, just watching the innocent face of that little kid, woman, elderly, was killed brutally by American soldiers. And then another scene I saw, American soldiers was killed, died on my land in Vietnam. It was sad to see it, but it's worse to see my own people was massacred in the brutal way.
I should add
in
that,
Vietnam.
That my wife is very emotional when she talks about Vietnam, not only about the war, but about her escape from Vietnam. It just brings back a lot of memories from those times.
I can imagine. Well, we'll stay with you, Jim and Suwan, and turn the conversation to what do you hope this sort of national viewing of this 18-hour documentary will lead to? Ken Burns has said that he hopes that this unifies our nation. Is that possible?
My view is I suspect it will not unify our nation. I think what it will do is at least highlight issues that have really not been resolved. I mean, the divisions in this country can be traced, and Ken Burns has said this, right back to the Vietnam War period, the sort of mistrust of government, all of that goes back to that period. And the continual, shall we say, intervention in nations around the world. There are so many parallels between the Vietnam War and what we're now going through in Afghanistan. So I think it's not going to heal, but it's at least going to expose a lot of issues that have been around and still are around. My greatest hope for the film is that it will educate people of a whole new generation, and hopefully out of that will come a more informed public about the perils of going into a war, into a place where we really had a very poor understanding of conditions on the ground back at that time.
And Adri, I'll read to you, following up on this thought, something that Ken Burns said in an interview about the film. He says, it can help us understand where we are today, this lack of civil discourse, the partisanship, the sense that we've made enemies of each other. All of these were seeds born during the Vietnam era that have not played out. Maybe if we can unpack Vietnam, we can begin to have intimate conversations between a father and son, between a granddaughter and a grandmother.
Absolutely. And I think that's to my point earlier, is that the fact that people are finally talking about it and that this has given us an opportunity to talk about it. Entirely too many times in my capacity as director do I hear people say, you know, I just wish I had heard that story before he or she was gone. Like, it's too late. It's too late once they're gone. Tell the story now. Tell them about your anger. Tell them about your frustration. Why are you feeling this way? I feel as if the term moral injury has become much more popular today and has somehow been confused a little bit with post-traumatic stress disorder. But I want to bring this up particularly because I feel as if there's moral injury as a nation and then as individuals. And I think this documentary shows how many people have a moral injury as a nation, how we collectively have a moral injury from Vietnam. Dr. Jonathan Shea says, moral injury is present when there has been a betrayal of what's right by a person of legitimate authority or by oneself. And I think that as a nation, we have seen too many leaders in political positions, too many decision makers in legitimate authority, actually not even themselves know what right is. And so as a nation, we suffer from the Vietnam War because how much of it was right.
Terry, what do you hope the film will do?
Well, I've always hoped after Vietnam that we could learn from our mistakes. Now that we're in Afghanistan and still in the Middle East, I'm not sure that we can see Vietnam as a mistake, or I just hope that we can see getting involved in other countries' civil wars may not be a good thing for us, you know. I wouldn't want to send my son to Afghanistan, and to tell you the truth, I wouldn't go to Afghanistan if I was called up today. You know, I don't believe in it. I believed in the war that I went to. I'm a patriot, but I think we have to draw the line, a certain line in the sand at certain times, is to say we can't do this.
We're discussing Ken Burns' documentary on the Civil War, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's documentary. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make MainCalling possible, as does Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
I'm Gabe Ferris, and this is Doug Rawlings' poem about his time in Vietnam, when he was just a few years older than I. Unexploded Ordnance, a ballad. For Chuck Searcy and the thousands of Vietnamese who have labored off and on since 1975, working to undo what we have done. So I was maybe all of 21, when they whipped me into some kind of soulless shape. Yet another one of America's weeping mother's sons, sent forth into this world to raise, pillage, and rape.
And now it's coming on to another Christmas Eve, and songs of joy and peace fill up our little town. How, I ask myself, could I possibly believe I could do what I did and not reap what I had sown? In that land far away, from what I call home, a grandfather leads his granddaughter by the hand into a field where we did what had to be done. They trip to a searing heat brighter than a thousand suns.
Doug, thank you for sharing your Vietnam War story.
Gabe, thanks for listening. I'm Doug Rawlings. I'm a founding member of Veterans for Peace, and this is my Vietnam story.
And a reminder for those of you still wanting to watch The Vietnam War by Ken Burns, Maine Public Television will rebroadcast all this week's episodes this Sunday from 8:30 in the morning to 6 in the evening. Please note also that all 10 episodes will be rebroadcast starting next week for 10 weeks, each Tuesday evening at 9 on Maine Public Television. The Vietnam War is also available anytime through your Passport account and on demand at mainpublic.org. And in addition, if you have the PBS app for Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, or the PBS app for Android or iOS devices, you can watch it there anytime.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, your reaction to the just-concluded Ken Burns, Lynn Novick Vietnam War documentary. With me in the studio, Adria Horn. She is director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. Terry Grass is a U.S. Army veteran of the Vietnam War. And joining us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C., Jim Laurie in Sunsan. Jim is a journalist and broadcaster who reported from Vietnam when the war ended. Swan is Jim's wife. She was a child during the war in Vietnam, and she later fled to America. We invite you to join the conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We do have a lot of people calling. If you are unable to get through, please try again in a few minutes. But before we go to those calls, Terry, you write poetry about
about being in the Army and about Vietnam.
And I've asked you if you'd share one short poem with us now.
I will. And this is called Grandpa. Hi, Grandpa. Can I sit on your knee? Grandpa, Papa said you were in the Vietnam War. Did you have a uniform and a steel helmet? Was it green? Did you march, Grandpa, with big boots? Was it fun? Did you shoot a gun? How big was it? Grandpa, did people die in the war? What were their names? What were their names, Grandpa? Grandpa, please tell me their names.
Thank you. We'll go to John, calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Hello to everyone. My wife and I watched the entire series, occasionally reluctantly, but Vietnam was a backdrop for my childhood, and I got out of high school in 72, so I missed the draft. I don't feel the resolution was good enough. This conversation touches on some of those issues. The discussion of the other people that suffered obviously is something that was not adequately dealt with in the show. And interesting, Terry's poem, wanting the names of the victims. I was thinking that very powerful memorial with, what, 58,000 names of Americans who were casualties in Vietnam obviously affects people and tends to bring us together, and it was a nice touch to end the series. But I was also thinking we need a memorial that has more than 2 million other names of Vietnamese, Laos, Cambodians, and we really need to grapple with the terrible mistake that our country made. And I was against the war by the time I graduated from high school, not earlier. And I certainly want to apologize for any scorn that were shown to people that served there. But I feel only greater scorn for those who made the bad decisions that led to that. And I think there's a bunch of causes that we need to still address that
John,
were only touched on.
John, thank you so much for calling in. Jim Laurie, I'm going to ask you and soon to reply. You probably agree, yes?
I think we do. I mean, as we said earlier, the Vietnamese and the Khmer and the Lao were those who suffered most. There were at least 1.3 million war dead from Vietnam. There were 150,000 Cambodians killed by American bombing during the war. So it goes on and on. And are there memorials for them? There are memorials, interestingly, in Vietnam for the winners, for the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong. There are no memorials for the losers, the South Vietnamese. And yet the South Vietnamese suffered and fought. I thought Ken Burns was slightly unkind to the South Vietnamese fighting man. Usually he was portrayed in the film as being either corrupt or incompetent. Not all units were. Some of the South Vietnamese that I was with during the war fought very well indeed.
My older brother was in the army and he was captured after 1968, and he was suffering, and he wasn't one of these corrupt South Vietnamese army that Ken Burns has mentioned in his documentary. And I think it's very unfair that he didn't tell enough stories on the good Vietnamese, South Vietnamese soldiers and the bad Vietnamese soldiers.
John, thank you for your call. Go to Chris, who's calling from Lewiston. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks a lot. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I was also on the panel at the pre-screening at USM, and so I want to thank Maine Public for sponsoring that. I'm not going to comment necessarily on the documentary. I did see all 10 episodes of it. I think it has some strong points. I can point out some weak points, but one practical upshot of this is that I teach courses on the history of the Vietnam War at USM and other institutions, and two colleagues of mine at USM and I are collaborating on a one-credit course centered on the documentary series. And one of my hopes is that the documentary will stimulate greater interest in going into depth into the history of the Vietnam War.
Hey, Chris, so is your class going to be open to the public, or is this to USM students?
I was afraid you would ask that, and I think it's just USM students right now, but we haven't really mapped out exactly how the class is going to be run or whether it's open to other people. I wish I had a better answer for
you. Okay.
Okay,
well, if you find out it's open to the public, please post something on the Maine Public Facebook page, or Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm going to read an email from Jean. She writes, while watching the Vietnam documentary, I could not help but note the parallels between our recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and how our government responds and manages the information being given to we Americans, probably on everything. Why should we trust our leaders? Deceit abounded and still abounds. History repeats itself. Arrogance and hubris are so evident. Nixon and Kissinger were far more despicable than I realized. I will say the soldiers and officers on both sides, the prisoners of war, draft dodgers, war protesters, government officials, survivors, and Gold Star families gave profound and deeply felt reflections and perspectives that gave me much to ponder. Touching and profound. Adria, thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. You know, I'm a lieutenant colonel in the Army now, and I have been in these conflicts, and I went, you know, to Iraq when I was 24. And my girlfriend is leaving for Afghanistan next week. And I was there in 2006. It's 11 years ago. I was there, and she's leaving next week. And, you know, I probably shouldn't feel the way I'm feeling or say it, but I don't get it. I don't get it. And I was actually physically ill. My stomach was upset watching parts of this documentary and reflecting on too many parallels. Entirely too many parallels that as political leaders and as military leaders who, you know, don't actually have a military mission for what the reasoning is. You know, if the domino theory was the reason we went to Vietnam War to stop the expansion of communism, is stopping an ideological spread a military mission?
Jim, are you jumping in?
I was about to say that. That's a very, very good point. There's some interesting differences, though. We have, of course, a volunteer army today. The Army of Vietnam was a conscription army. Therefore, there was much more popular involvement, if you will, in terms of the anti-war movement. Everybody had somebody that was either trying to avoid the draft during the Vietnam War or was being inducted into service. I was a young guy who was part of the lottery system. I was very lucky. They had a lottery system in 1970 whereby if you got the right number according to your birthday, you didn't go. But if you got a higher number, then you did go. I ended up going as a reporter and probably saw more combat in Vietnam than had I had gone and was perhaps in the back of the lines during the war. But we don't focus as much, it seems to me, on Afghanistan and its right and wrongs, because in fact we have a volunteer army that is there, and it doesn't have quite the impact back on the home front that the old conscription army did.
And Jim, okay, that's a good point you bring up, and also just the numbers. Isn't the accurate number right now, Adria, that 1%?
Less than 1% of our nation is actually serving in the military today. Less than 1%.
Right. And, of course, by sheer numbers in Vietnam, at its peak, you had well over 500,000 U.S. troops in Vietnam.
Terry, you look like you wanted to jump in.
I just think about the cost of it all, you know, and I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about families that are ruined. I'm talking about just people's lives. These guys have to serve 4 and 5 terms, you know, in the war. You know, how many times did they go to Iraq? I talked to a guy that was 2 times in Iraq, 1 time in Kosovo, and 2 times in Afghanistan. You know, you talk about PTSD and the cost that it puts on somebody's head. It's not good. It's not good. We need to rethink this whole thing.
And I think too many are shouldering too much of a burden that was much more widespread before.
I agree.
I have an email from Robin. I was a middle schooler growing up in Maine during the Vietnam War. When it ended, I was a sophomore in college. I have been unable to bear the thought of watching the documentary. Just hearing the music from the soundtrack on other NPR programs has been upsetting. It's like being 13 again and being horrified by the images I was seeing on the TV news. What we put the young boys through as we drafted them, the, quote, watching a train wreck in progress feeling of it, the horrors we inflicted on the people there and their land. My father, a World War II veteran, seemed confused by it all. We never talked about it in my family. It was traumatic. I wonder how many other people like me cannot watch the film, plan to someday, but not yet.
Well, people who lived through it, of course, were watching it on television back here in the States every night. It was, has often been talked about as the first television war. And it was every single night. In those days, there were only three networks, NBC, CBS, ABC, and you were tuned in and you would see those images coming back. We don't see as much of the Afghan War, for example, as we did on a nightly basis of the Vietnam War.
We'll go to Belinda, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Belinda. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Oh, boy, brevity. Very difficult. My brother and my son's godfather both served in Vietnam, and I graduated from high school in 1969, and I protested against the war. So it's very passionate for me. I watched it very passionately, and I realize through all the tears that I'm going to have to watch it again to watch it more critically. But I thought it was remarkable because veterans can pick out everything that's wrong with it, but the rest of us needed to see it as it's produced because it says so much. And I really feel that the country is not going to be unified through this documentary. I hope it will put us on alert because I think that that's what we need to be. I was so angry with the subterfuge and the incredible lies that were so well hidden, and we really believe that our government officials were telling us the truth, and we're in a place right now where the lies are not hidden and we're still watching it play out. So I feel that the piece that you read on moral injury really plays out into everything that's gone on Vietnam and since Vietnam. There have been many incidences, you know, in the country and the world in which moral injury really does talk to what's going on with us as a society. And I really hope everyone will read that and reflect upon it, because I know I need to reflect upon it more. I would just like to say that I hear people saying that not enough. But I want to say, what more could they have given us to mourn about at this moment in time? I feel the documentary gave well over 2 million people who lost their lives all the way around the acknowledgement for their sacrifice. And I believe we can go further with it. But that documentary put an awful lot before our very eyes and gave us so much to think about. And I think that that's exactly what it should have done, and that we'll go further with it as classes unfold and as people start talking about it more. And there were a lot of people who could not watch it, who I truly wish would. I think it's an essential piece of work for the American nation and the world at large.
Belinda, thank you so much for calling in, and very articulately spoken. Terry?
Yes, I agree with that. Every year I go to Mount Ararat and Lisbon High School and speak to students about Vietnam and about Tim O'Brien's book, The Things They Carried, and I see a copy of it on the table. And they want to know. They want to know about the war. They're studying it. They want to know what happened. They want to know the things that I carried. They want to know what I have on my shoulders now. They want to know about PTSD. They want to know about the things that affected all of us.
Thank you for your call. We're going to go to another short break. But first, a look ahead at Monday's program. Join host Keith Shortall and his guests to discuss school consolidation in Maine. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Penobscot Shores, proud sponsor of Poldark on Masterpiece. Season 3 premieres Sunday, October 1st on Maine Public Television. And IAE, presenting An Evening with David Sedaris, coming to Merrill Auditorium on October 15th. Tickets at davidsedarisontour.com.
Hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans live in New England, with many of the basic needs that loved ones on the island are now cut off from.
Being able to get a glass of clean water, stuff that we take for granted. It's a complete feeling of helplessness.
On Next, from the New England News Collaborative, Maria's impact back home, And we'll see if an old factory can revitalize a neighborhood it once turned its back on. I hope you can join us.
Coming up at 2 after Maine Calling.
I'm Emily Kay, and this is Rebecca LaJoy's Vietnam memory of a time in her life I am fast approaching. My personal life was devastated at an early age when my husband, Lieutenant J.G. Gerald William Seabee, lost his life in Vietnam. Initially, I saw only our personal lives being destroyed, but soon I realized that my grief was something mutually shared by many others. On a beautiful day in May, many years ago, we bid a tearful farewell on a Navy pier in San Diego. He had worked arduously, raising himself above circumstances of his birth by graduating from the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis and Naval Flight School as a helicopter rescue pilot in Pensacola. We knew when he was assigned to San Diego that his next journey would lead him to Vietnam. His life was ended prematurely. The tragedy of the loss of his life
was exacerbated by the painful realization that the remainder of his life was not only curtailed, but also was denied fulfillment. His life was ended prematurely, and we can never know what he would have become. My husband's death was not the end of the story. I was extremely fortunate to begin life again and share it with another deeply moral, kind, intelligent, and loving man.
Thank you, Rebecca, for sharing your story.
Thank you, Emily. I am Rebecca LaJoy, and this is my Vietnam story.
Ken Burns, The Vietnam War, repeats this Sunday from 8:30 in the morning to 6 in the evening, and the entire series is available on demand at mainpublic.org through Passport or any of the PBS apps for Roku, Apple TV, and other platforms.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, reaction to the PBS documentary on the Vietnam War. And joining me in the studio, Adria Horn. She is director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. Terry Grass is a Vietnam veteran, joining us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. Jim Laurie and Soon Son. Jim is a journalist who covered the end of the Vietnam War. Swan is Jim's wife, who is from Vietnam. She grew up during the war and fled. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Lawton, who is calling from Penobscot. Hi, Lawton. Go ahead.
I really appreciate it. I was a medic in a veterans hospital in Chicago, and I was just so glad they mentioned nurses because the compassion of nurses. I was a 19, 20-year-old, pretty shaky medic, and we had to deal with some terrible wounds, and I'm just so glad you're doing this program, and I agree with whatever has been said, too, about, you know, I spent 10 years in basements on the 4th of July with guys that were having traumatic breakdowns from fireworks after the war. I think that group is still meeting in Chicago. And had a lot of friends that died and committed suicide, but you think of the millions of people, and it was literally, I think the Veterans for Peace has said it's more like 3 million in Vietnam. And what we did to Cambodia and Laos, and boy, I just really appreciate this program. Thank you.
Lawton, thank you so much for calling.
Jennifer, it's obviously a very emotional topic for everybody when you talk about Vietnam. I want to put in a slight plug for my wife's people. One of the legacies of the war were 1.3 million refugees coming to this country between 1975 and even in the last few years. The boat people who left Vietnam in rickety boats. It all came back to me when I saw the refugees in the Mediterranean. But I must say, on a positive note, we welcomed the Vietnamese refugees, and I think we did pretty well by them. We're not treating refugees as well, it seems to me, today.
Mm. Lawton, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go to Mike calling from Kittery Point. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Just a couple of quick points. I just, several years ago, completed a 30-year career as an active duty Navy physician, but did spend a year on the ground in Kandahar, Afghanistan. doing combat casualty care, so kind of had it up front. And I guess the two points I would want to make is, in the documentary, Neil Sheehan made the point that while World War II is cited as the greatest generation, he cited that Vietnam veterans need to be considered that as well. And I would say my experience in Afghanistan is that, you know, truly men and women who go to war just need to be understood to have taken on existential threats, and they all need to be considered as heroes. And as it's less than 1% of the population, we lose that fact. And then the second point I would make, and I think some of the comments go to this, you know, war, while it's diplomacy and politics breaking down, it's also a profit business. And I think as we look at motivations for nations getting in and out, those of us who serve and those of us who fund it through our taxes just need to be aware that there's many motivations that go into this kind of venture. So those are my points.
Adria?
I'd like to actually read an email that we received following one of the documentary screenings. It's a gentleman from Freiburg who came to Damariscotta for this. He said, "For myself and so many of us sons of World War II veterans, we grew up knee-high to giants. Their humble behavior and experience exemplify the relationship of service and country. For myself, the absence of acknowledgement of service was devastating. Being ignored by society seemed a punishment for failure. I was neither the best and certainly not the brightest, but like so many, I stepped up to the call. It was what was expected. War is a terrible reality. Truth and innocence are its first casualties. Surviving the conflict to return home to indifference at best and vilification at worst is unjust. I'm thankful that I survived these decades to personally experience an honest and heartfelt welcome home." I just wanted to share that because as Mike, the caller, talked about, you know, the greatest generation, as if judgment of a generation of veterans is more important than another generation, which is not something I think anybody really aspires to. But I think the documentary and being in this position and talking to so many Vietnam veterans and those who were protesting and listening to audience members shows me how, despite the wrongs, the injustice, a conflict that had entirely too many questions and never enough answers and certainly not enough right answers for closure, listening to people now 50 years later and hearing them actually say, you know, I probably didn't do the thing I should have. I'm sorry that we didn't do. Actually coming to that type of self-reflection, I saw that, and I think some people experienced it on air in the documentary, and I'm really glad that we were all able to actually see that people can get to that resolution themselves and not punish themselves for life for things that they actually had no control over in the beginning.
I was moved by the woman who had been the protester. Absolutely. Who said, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
Terry?
I was moved by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong. I don't know. I don't think anybody can be in a war and not feel something, you know. The enemy that we had were human beings also. And you know that if you look at them as objects, then you're never going to see that. You're never going to feel that. But if you see them as humans, then you start to question, why the hell am I here? Why are we doing this? Why are they doing this?
In fact, there was a former protester who had come to the Portland screening, and he stood up and he said, you know, "I've been questioning basically the purpose of the Vietnam War for years. I was a protester. I traveled around the country." And he said, you know, 50 years later, I feel as if the service members were the purpose because they gave us as a nation an opportunity to use our voice in a way we never thought we could have. He said that right there, and I just, I don't know his name, but I thought that was profound that he stood up and said that, and I really appreciate his comments.
Mike, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Cape Elizabeth and Peter. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Yeah, well, my comments would pale compared to many of yours have. I was, Vietnam was winding up, starting up before we got involved in it. I was in Korea, in the Navy for Korea at the time, not in the activity. But this was a great service, I believe, the broadcast. I was oblivious to really the goings-on in Vietnam. I listened to the news and so forth on the radio, but had no idea how long it went on in my memory. I was amazed to realize how late it was. I guess my greatest comment is about Kent State. I hope we learned a lesson there. Do not put green troops with live ammunition up against mobs. People will get killed that way. And that's what we had. You know, they were untrained people against a mob, not just students, a mob. And I hope we don't do that again. But by the rest of the comments on Vietnam, you got much, much better ones coming.
Peter, thank you so much for calling. Terry?
I felt really bad for the Kent State folks, you know, the way they were portrayed in the film. I was still in the Army in Germany when I heard about the incident, and I cried when I saw it. It's just very powerful that, you know, you learn in this country we can stand up for what we believe in, but, you know, that can be taken away in an instant.
Monica writes, it gave me new understanding of why the military budget is so large as I saw all the equipment being left behind or pushed off the ships into the ocean. I think the powers that be lie to us and don't give us true stories. We'll go to Jim in Winthrop. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've only watched 8 episodes, but in the 8th episode, it mentioned many of our young people going to Canada. And in one sentence, it said that approximately 30,000 Canadian citizens volunteered for service in Vietnam. And that really shocked me. And I was wondering if anyone could expand upon that. Were we recruiting there? What was driving the Canadian young men to volunteer?
Okay, Jim, I don't have a panel of historians, but Jim Laurie, do you know the answer by chance?
I don't know the answer why. I know that when I arrived in Vietnam in 1970, I met a young Canadian who had volunteered and had just completed his tour, and he stayed on and became a journalist. So Alan Dawson was his name, and he was one of these Canadians who went. But to be very honest, I never asked him, why would you do such a thing when everybody else, at least the American side, were going to your country to avoid the war?
Well, Jim, thanks for your call. And let's see, we're going to go here to Artie on Facebook. The Vietnam War documentary is not the film to end all films regarding this military, political, and civilian tragedy. It is my hope that the Burns and Novick intention to make this comprehensive subject to enhance the desire and passion for all to seek new understanding and further study on what had been learned. My hope is that more research and compassion and guide they We regard, I'm sorry, I think the translation here is a little, anyway, we regard our future diplomacy and conflict. Our government will never lose a sense of outcome, what we are reflecting on in Vietnam. So hoping that this renews a sense of reflection that perhaps we have lost.
I agree with that. I think it does renew a sense of reflection. I think Belinda and some of the other callers have talked about not being able to watch it or knowing people who won't be able to watch it for a while. I think for the number of people who have watched it, the conversation that we're having now, conversations that are happening in offices and workplaces at home, that is a renewed sense of reflection, and that never gets old. Retelling that story and sharing with somebody will hear it for the first time or hear it differently for the first time, and that never gets old.
I think we have time for one more, and this is an email from Alden. I've been watching the series with great interest, having been a Vietnam-era vet. I was in the Navy offshore of Vietnam in 67 to 69. I recommend a recent book, Nothing Ever Dies, by Viet Thong Nguyen, a Vietnamese-American author and professor at USC. It shows wars are fought twice, on the battlefield and in memory of those involved. For those who wish to be able to reach out, I have found a way in teaching literacy to immigrants from Cambodia and Vietnam and helping them acquire U.S. citizenship. And Terry, you have found a way by writing poetry and talking to high school students.
I have. I went to the vet center screaming, I want my friggin' life back. And the counselor took me in and said, well, sit down here. Let's talk. and we talked, and I knew that he was a good counselor just from the first moment I met the guy. And he said, do you ever think about writing about your experiences? Do you ever think about writing about your experiences and sending a letter off to the person that you're writing? You know, at that time I was against, I wanted to send a letter to Nixon and Johnson. They were all dead. So I started writing, and it started coming out in the form of poetry. And that's helped me immensely. You know, I can put it on paper and I can look at it and I can learn from it, and other people can learn from it also.
Well, thank you for being here and sharing your story, all four of you. That was Terry Grass, U.S. Army veteran of the Vietnam War. I'm going to ask him if he'll give me a printed copy of the poem he shared so I can put it on our Facebook page. Adria Horn is director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. Soon San Vo is originally from Vietnam and left in the wake of the war to come to America. And Jim Laurie, an award-winning journalist and broadcaster who has worked throughout the world and saw the fall of Saigon. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. The show's produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Calling.